Chapter 83. Nurse and patient. I had not been at home again many days, when one evening I went upstairs into my own room to take a peep over Charlie's shoulder and see how she was getting on with her copybook. Writing was a trying business to Charlie, who seemed to have no natural power over a pen, but in whose hand every pen appeared to become perversely animated, and to go wrong and crooked, and to stop, and splash, and sidle into corners like a saddle donkey. It was very odd to see what old letters Charlie's young hand had made, they so wrinkled, and shriveled, and tottering, it so plump and round. Yet Charlie was uncommonly expert at other things, and had as nimble little fingers as I ever watched. Well, Charlie, said I, looking over a copy of the letter O in which it was represented as square, triangular, pear-shaped, and collapsed in all kinds of ways, we are improving. If we only get to make it round, we shall be perfect, Charlie. Then I made one, and Charlie made one, and the pen wouldn't join Charlie's neatly, but twisted it up into a knot. Never mind, Charlie. We shall do it in time. Charlie laid down her pen, the copy being finished, opened and shut her cramped little hand, looked gravely at the page, half in pride and half in doubt, and got up, and dropped me a curtsy. Thank you, miss. If you please, miss, did you know a poor person of the name of Jenny? A brickmaker's wife, Charlie? Yes. She came and spoke to me, when I was out a little while ago, and said you knew her, miss. She asked me, if I wasn't the young lady's little maid, meaning you for the young lady, miss, and I said yes, miss. I thought she had left this neighborhood altogether, Charlie. So she had, miss, but she's come back again to where she used to live, she and Liz. Did you know another poor person of the name of Liz, miss? I think I do, Charlie, though not by name. That's what she said. Returned Charrier. They have both come back, miss, and have been tramping high and low. Tramping high and low, have they, Charlie? Yes, miss. If Charlie could only have made the letters in her copy as round as the eyes with which she looked into my face, they would have been excellent. And this poor person came about the house 3 or 4 days, hoping to get a glimpse of you, miss. All she wanted, she said, but you were away. That was when she saw me. She saw me a-going about, miss, said Charlie with a short laugh of the greatest delight and pride, and she thought I looked like your maid. Did she though, really, Charlie? Yes, miss, said Charlie, really and truly. And Charlie, with another short laugh of the purest glee, made her eyes very round again, and looked as serious as became my maid. I was never tired of seeing Charlie in the full enjoyment of that great dignity, standing before me with her youthful face and figure, and her steady manner, and her childish exultation breaking through it now, and then in the pleasantest way. And where did you see her, Charlie? Said one. My little maid's countenance fell as she replied, by the doctor's shop, miss. For Charlie wore her black frock yet. I asked if the brickmaker's wife were ill, but Charlie said no. It was someone else. Someone in her cottage who had tramped down to St. Albans, and was tramping he didn't know where. A poor boy, Charlie said. No father, no mother, no anyone. Like as Tom might have been, miss, if Emma and me had died after father, said Charlie, her round eyes filling with tears. And she was getting medicine for him, Charlie? She said, miss, returned Charlie, how that he had once done as much for her. My little maid's face was so eager and her quiet hands were folded so closely in one another as she stood looking at me, that I had no great difficulty in reading her thoughts. Well, Charlie, said I, it appears to me that you and I can do no better than go round to Jenny's and see what's the matter. The alacrity with which Charlie brought my bonnet and veil, and having dressed me, quaintly pinned herself into her warm shawl, and made herself look like a little old woman, sufficiently expressed her readiness. So Charlie and I, without saying anything to anyone, went out. It was a cold, wild night, and the trees shuddered in the wind. The rain had been thick and heavy all day, and with little intermission for many days. None was falling just then, however. The sky had partly cleared, but was very gloomy even above us, where a few stars were shining. In the north and northwest, where the sun had set 3 hours before, there was a pale dead light both beautiful and awful, and into it long sullen lines of cloud waved up like a sea stricken immovable as it was heaving. Towards London a lurid glare overhung the whole dark waste, and the contrast between these two lights, and the fancy which the redder light engendered of an unearthly fire, gleaming on all the unseen buildings of the city, and on all the faces of its many thousands of wondering inhabitants, was as solemn as might be. I had no thought that night, none, I am quite sure, of what was soon to happen to me. But I have always remembered since that, when we had stopped at the garden gate to look up at the sky, and when we went upon our way, I had for a moment an undefinable impression of myself as being something different from what I then was. I know it was then, and there, that I had it. I have ever since connected the feeling with that spot and time, and with everything associated with that spot and time, to the distant voices in the town, the barking of a dog, and the sound of wheels coming down the miry hill. It was Saturday night, and most of the people belonging to the place where we were going were drinking elsewhere. We found it quieter than I had previously seen it, though quite as miserable. The kilns were burning, and a stifling vapor set towards us with a pale blue glare. We came to the cottage, where there was a feeble candle in the patched window. We tapped at the door and went in. The mother of the little child who had died was sitting in a chair on one side of the poor fire by the bed, and opposite to her, a wretched boy, supported by the chimney piece, was cowering on the floor. He held under his arm, like a little bundle, a fragment of a fur cap, and as he tried to warm himself, he shook until the crazy door and window shook. The place was closer than before, and had an unhealthy, and a very peculiar smell. I had not lifted my veil when I first spoke to the woman, which was at the moment of our going in. The boy staggered up instantly, and stared at me with a remarkable expression of surprise and terror. His action was so quick, and my being the cause of it was so evident, that I stood still instead of advancing nearer. "I won't go no more to the burying ground," muttered the boy. "I ain't a-going there, so I tell you." I lifted my veil, and spoke to the woman. She said to me in a low voice, "Don't mind him, ma'am. He'll soon come back to his head," and said to him, "Joe, Joe, what's the matter?" "I know what she's come for," cried the boy. "Who?" "The lady there. She's come to get me to go along with her to the burying ground." "I won't go to the burying ground. I don't like the name on it. She might go a-burying me." His shivering came on again, and as he leaned against the wall, he shook the hovel. "He has been talking off and on about such like all day, ma'am," said Jenny softly. "Why, how you stare. This is my lady, Joe." "Is it?" returned the boy doubtfully, and surveying me with his arm held out above his burning eyes. "She looks to me the t'other one. It ain't the bonnet, nor yet it ain't the gown, but she looks to me the t'other one." My little Charlie, with her premature experience of illness and trouble, had pulled off her bonnet and shawl, and now went quietly up to him with a chair, and sat him down in it like an old sick nurse. Except that no such attendant could have shown him Charlie's youthful face, which seemed to engage his confidence. "I say," said the boy, "you tell me, ain't the lady the t'other lady?" Charlie shook her head as she methodically drew his rags about him, and made him as warm as she could. "Oh," the boy muttered, "then I suppose she ain't." "I came to see if I could do you any good," said one. "What is the matter with you?" "I may be in froze," returned the boy hoarsely, with his haggard gaze wandering about me, "and then burned up, and then froze, and then burned up, ever so many times in a hour. And my head's all sleepy, and all a-going mad like, and I'm so dry, and my bones isn't half so much bones as pain." "When did he come here?" I asked the woman. This morning, ma'am, I found him at the corner of the town. I had known him up in London yonder. Hadn't I, Joe? Tom all alone's, the boy replied. Whenever he fixed his attention or his eyes, it was only for a very little while. He soon began to droop his head again, and roll it heavily, and speak as if he were half awake. When did he come from London? I asked. I come from London yesterday, said the boy himself, now flushed and hot. I may going somewheres. Where is he going? I asked. Somewheres, repeated the boy in a louder tone. I have been moved on, and moved on, more nor ever I was afore, since the toter one give me the sovereign. Mrs. Snagsby, she's always a-watching, and a-driving of me, what have I done to her? And they're all a-watching, and a-driving of me. Every one of em's doing of it, from the time when I don't get up, to the time when I don't go to bed. And I may going somewheres. That's where I may going. She told me, down in Tom All Alone's, as she came from Stolben's, and so I took the Stolben's road. It's as good as another. He always concluded by addressing Charlie. What is to be done with him? Said I, taking the woman aside. He could not travel in this state, even if he had a purpose, and knew where he was going. I know no more, ma'am, than the dead, she replied, glancing compassionately at him. Perhaps the dead know better, if they could only tell us. I've kept him here all day for pity's sake, and I've given him broth and physic, and Liz has gone to try, if anyone will take him in, here's my pretty and the better child, but I call it mine, but I can't keep him long, for if my husband was to come home, and find him here, he'd be rough in putting him out, and might do him a hurt. Hark! Here comes Liz back. The other woman came hurriedly in as she spoke, and the boy got up with a half-obscured sense that he was expected to be going. When the little child awoke, and when and how Charlie got at it, took it out of bed, and began to walk about hushing it, I don't know. There she was, doing all this in a quiet motherly manner, as if she were living in Mrs. Blinder's attic with Tom and Emma again. The friend had been here and there, and had been played about from hand to hand, and had come back as she went. At first it was too early for the boy to be received into the proper refuge, and at last it was too late. One official sent her to another, and the other sent her back again to the first, and so backward and forward, until it appeared to me as if both must have been appointed for their skill in evading their duties instead of performing them. And now, after all, she said, breathing quickly, for she had been running, and was frightened too, Jenny, your master's on the road home, and mine's not far behind, and the Lord help the boy, for we can do no more for him. They put a few halfpence together, and hurried them into his hand, and so, in an oblivious, half-thankful, half-insensible way, he shuffled out of the house. Give me the child, my dear, said its mother to Charlie, and thank you kindly to Jenny, woman dear, good night. Young lady, if my master don't fall out with me, I'll look down by the kiln by and by, where the boy will be most like, and again in the morning. She hurried off, and presently we passed her hushing and singing to her child at her own door and looking anxiously along the road for her drunken husband. I was afraid of staying then, to speak to either woman, lest I should bring her into trouble. But I said to Charlie, that we must not leave the boy to die. Charlie, who knew what to do much better than I did, and whose quickness equaled her presence of mind, glided on before me, and presently we came up with Joe, just short of the brick kiln. I think he must have begun his journey with some small bundle under his arm, and must have had it stolen or lost it. For he still carried his wretched fragment of fur cap like a bundle, though he went bareheaded through the rain, which now fell fast. He stopped when we called to him, and again showed a dread of me when I came up, standing with his lustrous eyes fixed upon me, and even arrested in his shivering fit. I asked him to come with us, and we would take care that he had some shelter for the night. I don't want no shelter, he said. I can lay amongst the warm bricks. But don't you know that people die there? Replied Charlie. They dies everywheres, said the boy. They dies in their lodgings she knows where, I showed her, and they dies down in Tom all alone in heaps. They dies more than they lives, according to what I see. Then he hoarsely whispered Charlie, if she ain't the toter one, she ain't the foreigner. Is there three of them then? Charlie looked at me a little frightened. I felt half frightened. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.